Welcome to the Polite Politics Podcast.
Political issues are too important to be decided by grown adults behaving like five-year-olds on a playground.
Your once-a-week guide to the real issues facing America. We'll forget the bias and the yelling.
There are good, honest, intelligent people on both sides of most political issues.
And just tell you what's really happening in America.
Welcome into the Polite Politics Podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Page. We've got a great show for you today. We're going to talk about the Patriot Act and all of the machinations around renewing some of it and our in-depth segment. And our guest is Zeke Stokes. He's the Vice President of Programs for the gay rights organization GLAAD. And he's going to talk a little bit about gay rights, what he's working on, what his organization's working on, and how they see the world. And we've got a lot of activists exposed. I've been out for a few weeks. Programming note, we've got this episode and one more episode, and then that will be the end of season one. Season two kicks off this fall. I want you to be sure to subscribe on iTunes before then. We've got a power-packed guest list. Already got a couple guests set up for that. So very, very excited for that. But first, the media is having a collective freakout about Hillary Clinton. This week, news broke from a CNN poll that showed her numbers are falling. Now, when she was the nonpartisan traveling the world as Secretary of State, her poll numbers went up really, really high. That's how it usually works. When people aren't in the partisan political atmosphere, their numbers go up when it comes to favorability. Recently this week, people noted that former President Bush, his approval ratings have rebounded. Why? Because he's not president anymore, because people aren't talking about him, because they aren't thinking about his policies. Whether you like President Bush or not, whether you like President Clinton or not, former President Clinton or not, or the other former President Bush or any of these presidents, their numbers go up when they're out of the partisan atmosphere. So Hillary, when she was the Secretary of State, her numbers were out of this world. People loved her percentage-wise. She was the most admired person on the planet in a lot of polls. But now that she's entered the partisan fray, those numbers have gone down. And they've gone down faster than I think most people thought they would. And this can be accounted for in part by her emails, by the Clinton Foundation stuff, and by her lack of response to it. And so people are having a freak out and trying to figure out what to do about it. And people are even considering Bernie Sanders, who is the self-described socialist senator from Vermont who says he's running against her. Martin O'Malley is starting to get some play. But the number that people are looking at that they're saying is the biggest concern was in this latest CNN poll from last Tuesday that found that a majority of Americans consider her untrustworthy. And my response to this is no kidding. She has been bombarded with a stream of story after story after story that looks really bad and that looks unethical. But as I've said before, and I will repeat this again, the argument for Hillary Clinton has never been that she is completely trustworthy or completely ethical. Same with Bill. The argument for the Clintons has always been that their competence is worth some of the unseemly things that come with them, including the people they hang around and other things. That's the argument that their defenders in the media who follow them will say. So let's talk just briefly about what has come up recently, and then I want to move on to some lighter things and some more interesting things. You know what's amazing about this story? I'm already sick of talking about it. I think I can only imagine what media members who have to do this on a daily basis think. But I'm sure that's going to benefit them. And you will notice, right now, the news organizations that are coming out with this stuff, Fox News is investigating a little, but it's the New York Times. It's Salon, who I'm going to quote here in a minute. It's left-wing organizations. They want to get this out of the way early so that it's either old news or they can pick a different candidate. I completely understand that desire, but until Hillary addresses this stuff, and some of it I don't think she's going to have a comparable answer for, it's not old news, I'm sorry. So let's start with this latest round of revelations. First, when the United States, either defense contractor or somebody that the Pentagon actually brokers the deal, sells weapons outside of the country. So when we sell weapons outside of the country, one of our businesses or if our military, the Pentagon, helps set it up, the Secretary of State has to approve it. Commercial sales during Hillary's time as Secretary of State, I think they looked at the first 3 years, nearly doubled to 20 nations during Hillary's tenure, during the first 3 years of Hillary's tenure, over a comparable period in the Bush administration. Now remember, the Bush administration, who was known for being a little too warlike, those numbers went up, nearly doubling. Here's the problem. 20 of those nations, a lot of them with questionable ties, also donated to the Clinton Foundation. And then military brokered sales got approved. You know, military brokered sales, so where the Pentagon got involved, from the Bush years to the Obama years when Hillary was in state, it was only 80% of what the Bush years had done in the Clinton years as Secretary of State, except for the 15 nations that donated to the Clinton Foundation. In that case, it was 143%. So here we have a natural experiment, and we pretty much have proof. She increased, or these nations donated money, and whether it influenced it or whether they just thought it influenced it, there's definitely a correlation between donations to the Clinton Foundation and how many weapons you got approved by the Secretary of State. That's obviously a big problem. Salon, which is a far-left organization, and which you will hear me criticize because it is often very irresponsible in how much it defends left-wing causes and in its tactics for doing so, even it came out and said, she just has no answer for this. On a lighter note, you know, I take a few weeks off, and I keep running into more and more stupid things that activists are doing. So, this week, we've got a three quick hitter for Activists Exposed.
Activists Exposed. You can't always get what you want.
You can't. Get out of here, you low-life scum.
First up, Law Enforcement Appreciation Day is something that's been going on for a long time, and something that Nike got involved with back after 9/11. However, it's getting boycotted. It earned boycotts in the last couple weeks because people said cops are killing black people. Cops are killing people and are out of control. I'm never going to be the person who is the most sympathetic to police officers. It's just not how I view the world and how I see things. But this is ridiculous. If your belief is that stereotyping is wrong, and I think it should be, my belief is that stereotyping is wrong, then I believe that it's wrong for police to target African-Americans, all African-Americans, just because some African-Americans commit crimes. I think it's wrong for them to stereotype that way, and I think most people feel that way. But here's the thing. The percentage of police officers who are committing crimes is really small. The percentage of police officers who are doing this stuff is really small. I'm against stereotyping African-Americans, but I'm also against stereotyping police officers, and particularly against attacking the individuals. We have some systematic problems in the police departments in our country, no doubt about it. Absolutely have to be dealt with over time. But boycotting Law Enforcement Appreciation Day would be like boycotting African-American History Month over a few things. It's stupid and it's offensive. Just stop and shut up. Next, Bruce Jenner, former Olympian, made news by announcing a few weeks back that he is transgender and wants to identify as a woman moving forward in his life. Now, there are a lot of people who are going to have their private opinions on the subject of Bruce Jenner, who's now going by Caitlyn. We'll call her Caitlyn. Caitlyn Jenner and her spread in Vanity Fair magazine and the things that she is now doing. A lot of people are going to have opinions about this. They're entitled to those opinions. But, as is always the case, activists cross the line. In this case, we have idiots petitioning the International Olympic Committee to strip Caitlyn Jenner of the gold medal that she won because it was a gendered event At the time, Bruce was competing with the men, but Bruce hadn't undergone the surgery, hadn't undergone any of those things. It's ridiculous, and it's just punitive in an attempt to be nasty. Look, have your private beliefs, think what you will, but there's nothing wrong with being polite to somebody you disagree with, and being respectful and treating people well regardless of that polite disagreement. What you teach your children and how you teach your children to handle situations like this is completely up to you. But there's no room for being impolite. There's just not. So, and this sort of thing just reeks of trying to attack someone egregiously. Next up, you know, the Los Angeles County Federation of Labor, which is an organization of labor unions, advocated that the city of Los Angeles adopt, and they did, a $15 per hour minimum wage. They did this over the objections of small businesses who said it was going to hurt their business, also over the objections of those who said, you know, sometimes there's other compensation that's not just hourly. They're in terms of work conditions, health benefits, other things like that that should influence this, and so we don't need a minimum wage at that level. Well, the unions prevailed and got to a 15-hour minimum wage. And now that same group wants companies who have union contracts to be exempted from paying the $15 an hour minimum wage. They want an exception to a law that they themselves promoted so that their union members will not necessarily get the minimum wage that they tried to force on everybody else. The hypocrisy here just boggles the mind. When we come back, it's time for an in-depth talk on the Patriot Act. And then Zeke Stokes will be by to talk about gay rights. Thanks for downloading the podcast. Be sure to like the Polite Politics community fan page on Facebook and be sure to tell your friends. Welcome back. You know, whenever a gigantic piece of legislation passes, there are usually 90 to 95% of things in it that are completely uncontroversial or things that are very, very popular. But there's always a little bit, well, not always, but often a little bit that is really controversial. And in the wake of September 11th, the Patriot Act has become unpopular because even though most of the provisions or a lot of the provisions were completely uncontroversial, there were some that were controversial because they were seen as a government overreach. And the public's opinion on the Patriot Act has changed as we've gotten further removed from that terrorist event, which makes sense. But provisions of the Patriot Act were set to expire this last week, and Congress had to renew it and reauthorize it, and Senator Rand Paul took to the floor of the Senate and essentially blocked that from happening. Now, the rules of the Senate provide that any speaker, when they're speaking, can go for as long as they want. That's why they call it the quote-unquote greatest deliberative body on earth. People are allowed to talk about any issue as long as they want, as long as they are standing and as long as they are speaking. They don't have to be coherent. They just have to be talking. And when that happens, nobody can take them off of the floor. And they can then yield their time to any other person. And so sometimes when speakers prevent a bill from coming up to a vote by just continuing to speak about any issue, it is called a filibuster. Senator Paul, and they can only be stopped by a vote of 60 senators, which both parties rarely have, either party rarely has, which means that it supposedly requires bipartisan compromise. Now, the last few years we've seen some struggles with that, but that's a topic for another day. Rand Paul took to the floor of the Senate on Sunday the provisions of the Patriot Act regarding some of the phone surveillance and other things that the NSA is doing were set to expire Sunday night. The Senate met specifically to reauthorize this on a Sunday afternoon on their rare instance, and Rand Paul decided to filibuster. He talked for nearly 11 hours standing straight to kill off the time. And as a result of that, forced its temporary expiration, and that set off a round of fireworks, mostly within the Republican Party, between Rand Paul, who's running for president, and more hawkish senators like John McCain and Lindsey Graham. And Lindsey Graham, I think, thinks he's running for president as well. But within that, you have a real divide within the Republican Party, because you have people who are more libertarian, who want less government, and therefore feel uncomfortable with some parts of the Patriot Act. And you have people who are really kind of pro-military industrial complex, like John McCain and Lindsey Graham, who are more in favor of these things. And everybody's going to have their own take on that, that you can leave it up to you. Democrats tend to side more with Rand Paul. But I'm inclined to think that a lot of that has to do with the fact that the Patriot Act was a Republican that came under President Bush, even though it was there was only one dissenting vote in the Senate when it was initially passed. You'll see divides among Democrats as well about some of these issues, though not as much. They're going to tend to side more with the individual liberty folks. Anyway, long story short, Rand Paul blocked it, and that set off a whole range of fireworks that you may have seen on the news, if you were unfortunate enough to watch our news. But what I do want to talk about is the change that happened, because the eventual change, the Senate then passed a revised bill called the Freedom Act that took away some of the powers of the Patriot Act, but kept most of them in place. It was called the USA Freedom Act, because we have to give a name that sounds so nice to every bill we pass. This bill dealt specifically, and the issue dealt specifically with the bulk collection of phone records. If you remember Edward Snowden, he exposed that the government was collecting people's phone data and phone information without telling you. And the truth is, the Patriot Act allowed the government, the NSA specifically, would reach out to, say, Google, or to a telecommunications company like Verizon, and say, we need the phone records for every person you have. And, oh, if you tell anyone that we've asked for it, it's a crime. And we'll put you, you know, the people in jail who say so for a very long time. And so these companies had been essentially coerced by the government into participating. Now, you've seen some legal rulings where the courts have come back and said, no, you weren't supposed to be able to do that anyway. But the Freedom Act makes this a little more clear. It does a few things. First, it eliminates bulk data collection, meaning rather than just, I want everybody's information, the NSA has to identify the people whose phone information they want, and they have to get permission from a court, which is what our Constitution requires, to collect that information. They can still ask for lots of people at once and get that approved by court, sometimes in the case of thousands, but at least they're not getting all of them. The next thing is it allows for telecommunications companies and companies who are being threatened and harassed to actually tell the public what's going on or provide more information. Because right now, they've been just completely silenced. You can't tell anyone if you're Google and the NSA calls and says, we want these people's information. Google can't tell anyone. And if they do, the people who expose it will spend their life probably in prison. So this changes that, allows them to talk. It does continue to allow for quote-unquote roving wiretaps. That is, if a person uses multiple phones, the FBI can change which phone they're listening to. And it also provides for what are called quote-unquote lone wolf provisions, so they're able to look at people who aren't associated with a terrorist group, as long as they can prove just cause to a judge. Now, here's the key on the Patriot Act stuff. This is a move in the direction that I think just about everybody thinks it should go. The question is, did it go far enough? For Rand Paul and the libertarians of the world, it's not even close. For other people, it's just right. So I'll leave it up to you to decide what it is you believe and where this line needs to go. But the reality is we are moving to take away some power from the government. When we come back, Zeke Stokes, Vice President of Programs for GLAAD, is going to talk about gay rights. It's a great interview. Stay tuned. Hey, everyone. Thanks for downloading the podcast. Do you disagree with something I said? You're probably not alone. Shoot me an email at tpage@politepolitics.com, and if you make a good point, I'll read it on the air.
My guest today has made his career working with progressive organizations, including the South Carolina Democratic Party, Service Members Legal Defense Network, and Media Matters. He's a frequent media commentator and is here to talk about GLAAD, where he's the Vice President of Programs. Welcome to the program, Zeke Stokes.
Thank you so much for having me, Tyler. Good to be with you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Zeke, why don't you give the viewers, the listeners, I should say, an overview of what GLAAD is. What does GLAAD do?
Sure. GLAAD was formed about 30 years ago. We're approaching our 30th anniversary this year, in fact, to fight the way gay men in particular were being covered in the media, specifically by the New York Post during the early days of the HIV and AIDS crisis. It sort of found its voice during that time. It was not known as GLAAD at that time. It was just a group of very involved, concerned advocates. But what grew out of that was the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, and that's the name by which it was known for the next 25 years or so. A few years ago, we dropped that full name just to go with GLAAD in order to be fully inclusive of the LGBTQ community and leave no one out. But our real mission is to leverage the media to tell stories. That's what we do. We're storytellers. To tell stories of LGBT people, their allies, and advocates who are working to accelerate acceptance in all areas of our world. So through entertainment media, through news media, through Spanish language and Latino media, all around the world and here in the U.S. So it's a big task, but we are committed and things are going very, very well these days.
Yeah, you mentioned they're going really well. I actually wanted to talk about that a little bit. I'm 30, and I think back to where things were about the time I was born for the gay rights movement. And with the HIV/AIDS crisis and other things. And even in the last 15, 20 years, I feel like things have really changed. How do you think we've gotten here? How have things changed? The Supreme Court's about to create a right to same-sex marriage.
We hope.
I'd be stunned if they don't. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I'm about to turn 40, and so I've seen it a little bit longer than you have. And what I'll say is that I grew up in a small town in rural South Carolina, and I couldn't imagine growing up that I would ever be able to be an openly gay man with a partner and the potential to be married if I choose to, and the potential to adopt children if I choose to, and to live in a country that's accepting and where equality is the order of the day. I think marriage is certainly an important benchmark, and we say this at GLAAD a lot, but it's not a finish line. There's still an enormous amount of work to do to ensure that LGBT people are included legally, but also accepted culturally wherever they live and work. Unfortunately, in the small town where I grew up, things aren't all that different than they were 30 years ago. It's still very scary for a young person to come out as gay or lesbian there, and that's to say nothing of those who may be trans and facing the challenges that come along with that. What we have to make sure of is that beyond legal equality, that we're creating a world where every kid feels safe to come out and feels loved by his family, her family, their community, is safe going to school, is safe in the locker room, is safe on the playing field, and is safe going into a career where he or she can't be fired for being who they are and can live in communities and raise their families in the same way everyone else does, because at the end of the day, we're not all that different. We want many of the same things that the rest of the world wants, and we just want to be able to be accepted and loved and included for who we are.
Okay. Wow, you cut a lot of the things I wanted to talk about there. Are there specific issues that you see as next on the horizon, assuming the marriage decision goes your way?
Absolutely. Late last year, we've been having this conversation for a long time at GLAAD. GLAAD has always been engaged in culture change, and obviously we are incredibly excited about the potential for this decision at the Supreme Court next month, or actually later this month. It's June now. Later this month. But what we know, what we've always believed, is that there's a lot of work to do afterward. And so, late last year, we commissioned a first of its kind poll here at GLAAD. It was done by the Harris Poll in conjunction with Nielsen. And we wanted to ask Americans questions beyond whether or not they support marriage equality or whether or not they believe people should be fired at work, but really get to the heart of how they feel about us in their homes, in their neighborhoods, in their communities, where the rubber meets the road. And so we ask questions like, are you comfortable attending a same-sex wedding? And we ask people to rate themselves on a scale of 1 to 5. Are you comfortable taking a child to that wedding? Are you comfortable if your child has an LGBT teacher at the head of a classroom? Would you take your child to a play date at a same-sex couple's house? And what we found is that, you know, while we're moving very rapidly, it seems, toward this place of full legal equality, there's still a lot of discomfort among Americans. 30% or so say they're uncomfortable attending a same-sex wedding. When you add a child to that equation, would you take a child to a wedding, it rises 8 to 10%, depending on where you live in the country. And so what we've got to do is leverage the media to tell stories, and that's what GLAAD is great at doing, to introduce people to their LGBT friends and neighbors, because the one thing we know that makes a difference is that when you know someone or you hear the story of someone who's LGBT, you're less likely to be discriminatory. You're more likely to love them and accept them. And so that's what we're focused on here at GLAAD.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And you talk about the rapid change. And I think sometimes the speed at which things have changed have led some who are a little more uncomfortable to overreact in different ways. I'm thinking about Marco Rubio's comments a couple weeks ago. And while I don't want your response specifically to that comment, I think there is an underlying concern that I'm from Utah, so Mormons or Catholics or those whose religion is probably, let's just assume for a moment, they're probably never going to change their view on whether homosexual sex is sinful or not. Mm-hmm. What would you say to those people? How do they fit into your world? How can they be accepting and tolerant, and can there be peaceful coexistence there?
I think we have to call a spade a spade, and I think religious bigotry is always bigotry, even if it's cloaked in religion. So we have to be honest about that. But I think for the most part, people who are religious are well-meaning people who want to love and accept their neighbors. That's the bedrock of most religion in the world. And so what we've seen in recent years are people from all walks of faith stepping forward to say, you know what, I've reconciled what it means to accept my LGBT friends and neighbors and still be in communion with my religion. Many of them have said quite frankly, look, we once thought being gay was a sin. Being gay is not a sin, and there is adequate, and in fact, biblical teachings actually back that up. If you just do the work and interpret it, interpret the Bible in a way that is based on 21st century understanding and not 18th century thinking. And so I don't think the two are mutually exclusive, and I think there will come a day when most religions and most religious people consider LGBT love and acceptance a core value and a value that's in line with their values and not something that has to be juxtaposed or reconciled. So I'm very hopeful about that. I grew up in a religious family in the South. I know lots of LGBT people who did and do and are, and their families are accepting, and they've figured out how to reconcile it with their faith, and the two aren't mutually exclusive. I think that's where we're headed as a society.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Zeke. I appreciate you telling us a little bit about things. I wanted, if you could, just at the end, I read on your profile that you're working on a documentary on look like transgender folks in the military. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been involved with this for a couple of years. I was involved in the fight to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and a lot of Americans don't realize that wasn't the end of the story. Transgender Americans still can't serve openly in our armed services, and they should be able to do that. Every qualified American who wants to put on the uniform and fight and risk his or her life for this country, I believe, should be allowed to do so. And so that includes transgender Americans, many of whom are already serving, but they're having to serve in the closet just as gay and lesbian service members did before the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So this is a documentary. It's sort of two-pronged. There's a documentary that's already finished that is making the rounds at the film festival circuit right now. And then there's an online component, which you can see at transmilitary.tv. And that is an online sort of chronicling of trans folks who are being discriminated against. And I think we're going to see a lot more of this in the coming months. And so thank you for bringing that up. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Zeke. Appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for downloading the podcast. Do you disagree with something I said? You're probably not alone. Shoot me an email at tpage@politepolitics.com, and if you make a good point, I'll read it on the air.